You know, there's that song that says that Santa's belly shaked like a bowl full of jelly. I feel that way right now, just so you know. I'd like to read to you, to start off, from the Gospel of Mark, according to the tradition of Mark. And this is from the fifth chapter in the verse number 21, and it'll be from 21 to 34. Some of you may have heard this story or references to it in the past, but nonetheless, I'd like to read it once again. When Jesus had crossed again in a boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the lake. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, he came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet, and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in a crowd and touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately, her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see how the crowd is pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the healer, of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. Very often, the story of the little girl is what's most pronounced in this. You know, I think there is a sense of, oh, good for the lady with the hemorrhage. You know, she's healed, good. We move on to the little girl, and that's it. I don't want to focus on the little girl, although it is important to recognize the symbolism of new life being brought about in her. The person I want to focus on, to a certain extent, is me. Or rather, I should say, in this case, in this story, the woman with the hemorrhage. I say it's me because that woman, that person, really could be any one of us. What has often struck me about this particular woman isn't that she was healed of her hemorrhage. That's nothing. If you read the scriptures, that's nothing for Jesus. Yeah, okay. I mean, he didn't even touch the woman and she was healed. The more significant part of that story, however, is that for the first time in 12 years, this creature who had to be stayed away from because she was unclean was now part of our community once again. I've always imagined what it must have been like for her, having to be on the periphery all the time because she was unclean. I can't imagine what it must have been like for her as a mother to perhaps watch her children grow up, her household change, and life happen. And I can't imagine what it must have been like for her to finally be able to come before this healer, to be healed, and then to have to approach him with fear and trembling. Because, you know, historically, when she approached Jesus and with fear and trembling, as it says, she was approaching Jesus ready to be done away with because she had dared to touch a man. She, the unclean, had dared to do what she was not supposed to do. But there too we see something where Jesus himself does what he is not supposed to do. He's not supposed to talk to her. And the Lord knows he's not supposed to touch her. But what does he do? I can only imagine that she must have come before him in fear and trembling, eyes down to the ground, ready to be hurt, to be done away with. She may have even knelt in front of him when he turned to her. And what does he do? He speaks to her. Now, I don't know about you, but any time I have spoken to somebody, I like to look at them in the eye. Hopefully they're not much taller than me, but if they are, you know, that's different. You do what you can. But that's what Jesus did to this person. I imagine Jesus lifting her up, standing, welcoming her to stand up, and seeing her as a human being, as a real person. No longer this outcast who cannot be here, but as someone beloved and worthy of love. And more than that, someone in whom love had taken root and brought about a change so significant that she was no longer an outcast, but once again one of ours. And that's why I say this is the story of me, and I would venture to say the story of many of us. Because in our journeys, it can be so easy one or another time to become that person who is outcast, who is thrown aside. For those of you who don't know, and I think all of you don't know, I'm from Midland. I was born in Odessa, but moved here. But I was raised here. I went to school here. A lot of people in the community knew me, Latino community. And now they know me as, ooh. My favorite one was just this week, at Tuesday morning. The wife of a deacon was there. She saw me, and she quickly walked away. And that's okay, because that's where she is. But that's the beauty of this particular scripture for me. Because we will face those people who would still say to her, yeah, okay, you may have been healed, but you're not really part of us. And how often do we not face that? How often do we not face those people who are challenging? That's not about them. It's about us. Because the challenge for us and the invitation for us is to be people of love. People who have encountered love in such a way that I can no longer and will no longer allow that love to be cast aside or torn down. And really, I think that's what the beautiful part of this story is. This woman wasn't necessarily 100% welcomed into everybody's home. And Lord knows, I'm sure all of us aren't welcome into everybody's home. But we all have the ability to love. And whether we know it or not, and oftentimes we don't, that love heals. And that love brings about a difference in other people's lives. And that's something that is amazing. Because it doesn't cost us anything. It doesn't challenge, it doesn't make, we don't have to build something, we don't have to give something, we don't, there's not anything we have to do but love. And that's what we are called to. You know, more and more, there is an idea sometimes that we have to be perfect Christians or perfect humans or whatever to be able to fully love and engage others. But the reality is that no. Insofar as we yearn and we strive to love, that is enough. Because the love will take root and we will become something more as we engage in that love with another. Whether it's somebody who welcomes it or somebody who doesn't welcome it. But the beauty is there nonetheless. Because as we engage in that authentic and sincere expression of love, change happens. And even though I may not know what this has done for that person, who's to say that this person will someday not feel or realize that presence of love in their lives? You know, Jesus came to this person, this woman, and he had every right to cast her aside even further. But that wasn't what happened. And really, if you think about it, and I've said this for many years, nobody's listened, but I've said this nonetheless. And it's actually a theology that is out there. But what really got Jesus crucified wasn't, you know, that he proclaimed himself as king. It wasn't that he said he was Son of God. It wasn't any of these things. What got Jesus crucified was the fact that he loved those who were not supposed to be loved. He didn't come to show us how to become God. He came to show us how to be human. And the beautiful thing about it is that it doesn't take much. Maybe it should take a few less tacos and Whataburger for me, but that's a different story. What it does take, though, is a willingness to step across the line that we have formed for ourselves and to share love. You know, many years ago, I had a professor, a hoity-toity Father so-and-so, who told me I was very saccharine and fake because all I talked about was love. But that's really what it's all about. You boil down every scripture that's out there, and it comes from a striving to be a presence of love. No matter who you are, no matter what we do, no matter where we've been, it really is about wanting to love another. Granted, there are little segues or tangents that those scriptures go on. But it ultimately comes down to that presence of love. So that's what we are encouraged to be. Love. It's not always easy. It's not always fun. But it's something that eventually enriches us and hopefully enriches the other. It's something that will raise us up and will raise the other up as well. Not because I have to, but because we together are changed by this love. So that's the journey we go on. A journey of love. A journey of love in which we share our sorrows and our joys. A journey of love in which we share the good and the bad. A journey of love in which we become who we are becoming. And hopefully, we are becoming people of love, because I do assure you that will make the difference. That being said, I often imagine what it must be like for people in the scriptures or people to, how they would express themselves. And I would ask you to just bear with me. And this is what comes to mind. And I'm not going to do it justice, so please forgive me. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take those broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you were only waiting for this moment to arrive. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. In love, we are free.